Okay, hi colleagues, welcome to this research seminar for the Heineken Observatory. Very pleased to welcome Yorgos Melios, who is a research fellow at the Department of Psychological and Behavioral Science here at the LSE, and a research advisor at Gallup. His research spans the intersection of political economy, behavioral science, and public policy. He specializes in using microeconometrics and experimental methods. He's published in journals such as the Journal of Politics and Political Behavior and various articles in international and media. Today he's going to be talking to us, as you can see, about the remnants of civil war, the immediate and long-run effects of electoral oppression in Cold War Greece. George will speak his usual thing for about 35, 40 minutes. It means that there'll be plenty of time for questions and discussion thereafter. Just so that I don't forget at the very end of this evening, can I mention to you our next event, which I think is the final research seminar for the academic year, which will be on May the 9th. So after the Easter break, and Yorgos Alegroskoufis will be talking about before and after the 1974 transition to democracy, institutions, politics, and economics in post-war Greece. So 9th of May, George Alegroskoufis will be speaking. But great pleasure to welcome George, and especially as an LSE colleague and someone I think who's going to be working with the observatory as it transforms into a research center in the next academic year.
George. Thank you very much for the invitation and for having me and for coming on 6 o'clock in the afternoon to hear about this. So this is a joint project with Vasilis Novothetis, who's at the University of Ioannina for quite a long time. We started this like 2019, I think, and it still needs quite a bit of work, but we have our first results that we want to talk about. So just a brief summary of what we're thinking about. So we want to take the elections of 1961 in Greece, I'm going to explain why these specific elections, to figure out mainly two questions. The first one is, how does the state respond when communist parties start to organize, or when the left is generally organizing and they have to do something about it? And whether being in the Cold War era matters in this case, in terms of state response. And what happens when the state responds with violence? What are the immediate and long-term effects of the state producing electoral violence against the left? And we are mapping that on different types of things. So we're looking at institutional trust in contemporary Greece. We're looking at populist votes, civism votes 2015. And we're also looking at economic activity. We're trying to figure out what are the economic impacts of pleasing this sort of role of the state in producing violence. And in this presentation, I'm going to speak a bit about the historical context as fast as I can and as best as I know, because Vasilis is better at this stuff. A bit about the identification strategy, some results what we have up to now, which is mainly the election and trust, and some things that we're looking about economic activity for the future in terms to get some ideas of where we want to go. So a short summary for those of you that will get bored of me talking like this for about 20 minutes. What we do is we use an instrumental variable approach where we basically get data about how information from the Kappa Kappa Epsilon radio came to Greece just before the elections in 58 and 61. So how does the Communist Party manage to organize through radio signals in different municipalities of Greece? And then we try to see whether the left actually organized better in these municipalities, or whether the electoral results before 61 increased, and whether the state observed that and basically produced violence in the next election to oppress them and reduce them as an opposition. And what we find is that there's a direct causal link between that. So where left organized, we observe more violence. Any type of violence, from arrests, to beating, to killing, to abuse, almost all of it goes up. We quantify what we think the effect would be in the 1961 elections for the left, and it's about 8%. And we're trying to see how this historical event plays out in modern contemporary outcomes. So, a bit of the background. I mean, most of you are Greek, so you basically you sort of know what we're talking about and why the 1961 elections are important, but from historical archives, we know that something happened. What happened and how deep it was or how much violence there was in 1961, we really don't know, but almost all newspapers from the day, from all of the sides of the political spectrum, are reporting that there are protests against the election. Whether the people think that there was actual violence, or whether the people think that they've been intimidated, or whether the army did something, there is clear evidence that something happened. We don't know what happened, we're trying to create a data set about it in this project, but something happened and we're going to investigate it. And I know that this is a sort of a touchy issue for Greeks. I think we are the first ones that actually pinpoint, at least in a quantifiable way, what happened in this historical event. So the brief historical motivation about that is that in the post-war Greece in 1956 and 1958, EDA or UGL started to raise in as a major opposition. They started to increase their electoral results. In 54, they started getting some municipal wins. In 58, they're becoming the major opposition of the country. In 61, we observe this effect of violence. We observe the left losing about 20% of their electoral wins in 58 out of nothing. The data of the era spoke about a move towards the center party and a move of the center party voters to the right, but we observe that EDA is losing quite a lot of votes in 61 and that this loss of votes persists over time, even until 1967 that we have data. Before the junta, EDA never gains these votes back. Okay? And just by observing, without doing an analysis, we can see that most of these voters, they don't vote at all. They didn't shift to the center, it's not like they preferred a given party, it just didn't come to vote. So we want to figure out what is going on here, why this came about, and whether this created a sort of long-term problem. And we're trying to approach it from a sort of rising literature in economics and political science that tries to quantify these sort of long-term effects and tries to look at basically three questions. How the spread of political messages or political propaganda affects elections. So how effective are different types of media in organizing different parties, particularly in an era that there is not a lot of types of information. How state actors and unofficial non-state actors controlled by the state respond to that organization of communist parties. Asimov has quite a bit of literature on the state responding to socialists by basically either oppressing them or removing them from the political spectrum. And generally how historical events affect and say political contemporary behaviors and beliefs. I'm going to save us a lot of time and skip a lot of the literature, but these are the main three things that we're talking, that we're trying to touch upon. So I need to spend some time on the timeline, on the types of events that we're looking at and why this happened in this way and they allow us to identify our results. So post-war, post the Second World War, Kukwe and generally the communist part of the political spectrum in Greece had a radio. They had an illegal radio called Free Greece that's operating from Belgrade. It's from the Greek army. They're transmitting messages. Most of the messages they're transmitting, they're where should you organize, what type of organization you should have in terms of conflict, the democratic army oath, types of like what is the prototype of a good soldier. These are the political messages, okay? This goes on until 1956. Start from Belgrade. In 1949, we have the end of this Greek Civil War, And at the same time, we have the split between Tito and Stalin, which basically means that the radio signal moves from Belgrade to Bucharest. So anything now is being transmitted from Bucharest. It sort of has the same purpose. It tries to organize the little Communist Party in Greece. But now that the civil war is over, the messages tend to fade out. We know from historical archives that the number of broadcasts is lower, the type of content remains the same, but nobody really cares about it. So it sort of fades out until 1956. In 1951, a vice created, the United Democratic Left Wing in Greece, which is sort of the legal version of QUER. They are not formally aligned in 1951, but they are the legal way of voting for the left and supporters of the Greek Democratic Army. Progressively, in 54 and 56, they start making some wins. They start becoming more and more like an opposition party. In 54, the opposition starts getting, not just the left, but also the center starts getting some electoral wins. And in 56, Avramopoulos is elected as the prime minister. And that is becoming quite prominent. Not quite prominent in terms of major opposition. They have about 6-7%, but they're becoming a key part of the political system. And in 58, they actually become the second party, the major opposition. Now, what happens that's crucial about our study in 58 is that between 56 and 58, the Kukwe Radio stopped broadcasting at all. They stopped existing. Zachariadis is ousted from Kukwe, and signal goes dead. Now, 4 months before the elections in 58, they are creating a new radio station that starts from Leipzig in Germany, and not just starts broadcasting messages again about Kukwe. All of the messages that they're producing, the majority of it is vote for Eda. We have a strategic partner that we want you to vote for. This is what you should be doing. There's a mass propaganda coming from Leipzig that directly tells Kukwe voters this is what you should be doing. Okay? So at the first instant, what we're trying to estimate is the effect of this new radio called the Voice of Truth on voting for Kukwe in 1958 and whether the place that got more votes then experienced more violence. So, a couple of things that are,
Just a little bit more background. On this timeline, at what point did McCarthyism become prevalent in Greece with the prosecution, executions, and also exile of left-wing and communist members? At what point in time around did that start becoming prevalent?
I think you're somewhere here. So right after the Civil War and starting onwards, like the death of Belogianis should be somewhere around here.
Yeah, thank you.
But the only thing that's quite crucial is that before this, there is no direct official relationship between the time and the world. The first message comes around the 58th elections. Just to give you a bit of background on what happens, this is a typical scenario of what the radio would talk about before 58. So that's the Democratic Army oath from 1947. This is the fighters tutorial on how to be a good fighter in the 1950s. And this is the type of political messages you see from 58 onwards. They talk about the electoral coup d'etat in 1961. They talk about voting ETA in 1958. They shifted more to the legal political participation on the left through ETA. Okay? And the way this was happened, which was sort of a covert operation to get it done, is that all of the information that was broadcasted on the radio was basically written in the Politburo of Kukwe in Bucharest, and then it was secretly transferred to Leipzig. Nobody knew what the message would be. They just knew a time. It would broadcast the signal, and then they would do that again and again and again. Okay, so we have quite good evidence that this was the party line. This, what was going on the radio was not some random guy talking about something. This was the true party line of the Communist Party. And we have quite good evidence But both the state and voters knew about the registration. So that information from the US Agency of International something, I don't know what they're called.
Information Agency.
Information Agency, right. That they're basically monitoring that there's a clandestine radio station in Greece that produces communist propaganda and that they should take care of it. And there is another one in Turkey and another one in Persia. This is part of the report basically talking about the radio being the direct distributor of messages from the Kukwe Central Committee. And we also have information from later studies that basically show that Greeks were actually listening to radios abroad. That they were actually using radio to pick up signals from abroad. And we know that about 7% in total in 1963, I think this is listening to signals coming from Moscow. So there is some direct evidence that both voters were listening to the radio station and that the state knew these types of messages were coming about. Now, how are we trying to identify this? We have two potential problems. The problem is that the violence is endogenous and we don't know where, how to go about that. And we know that both violence, election outcomes, and how signal is distributed in space are highly spatially correlated. And both of them can affect how we're estimating this effect. So we are using this ID estimation. We are basically figuring out an exogenous type of signal, and I'm going to explain how we get this signal, which signal can only affect violence through the 1958 elections, because before that it doesn't really exist. So we're trying to find the geographical differences of where signal could actually go in Greece, whether people picked up the signal in 1958. Based on that signal, they voted more for EDA in their local elections. The state knows, so we're beating them in 1961 to oppress the result. And to think a bit about the spatial spillovers, let's just do a very small thought experiment of a random municipality. Let's say that this is municipality X, whatever municipality. If signal is higher in this place because of mountains, of the sea, because of random geographical variation, I would expect that during the elections and I will get more votes. But at the same time, I would expect that the neighboring municipalities will also somehow get the spillover message. Maybe I talk to my friends, maybe I talk to my relatives, the message spreads to neighboring municipalities. I would expect some sort of effect to spill over in the municipalities next to me. And I will also expect that spillover to track back to my municipality. So I speak to them, we organize, they speak to people that live in my neighborhood, and they organize, and we sort of have a ripple effect across municipalities. And I expect that at the second stage, municipality X will get more violence. We will observe a higher probability of different types of violent events. So, with quite a few assumptions, we're trying to solve both of these problems. So we're using signal as an instrument to get rid of endogeneity, and we're basically trying to see that, and so also, that there is no other way that this signal can affect violence in 61 except of the 58 elections and where the left organized. And at the same time, we're trying to build a spatial ID that basically uses these spatial dependencies, these spatial spillovers, and estimates how much they're increasing the effect. What is the spillover on the outside municipalities, and what's the spilling from these municipalities? That is the Drucker 2017 spatial ID. And this is how we calculate the radio signal. So, Longley and Rice developed this irregular terrain model. I don't know much of the technicalities about it, but what they do is they basically get the information about how the antenna is producing the signal, and then based on the height, the frequency, and the strength of the antenna, they're trying to see how each part of the geography affects signal. So they're calculating what the signal would have been if there was no geographical variation, if you're basically living in a flat country, and then On top of that, they're calculating what they call signal loss, which is how much signal are you losing because of the geography. And therefore, for every specific place or municipality in this case, or even for every polling station in Greece, you can get variation that's only geographically driven of whether the signal went to voters. Okay? And this has started to be used by quite a few times now in economics. For example, Benolkin has a paper that uses that to estimate social capital in Indonesia. There's another paper in the US. But it's quite robust. It can estimate very small geographical differences of signal that can only be technology driven, nothing else. And we were lucky enough, and from a book from Vasily Kipsey-Bull in 2006, we found the information of the transmitter in Linespeak, and we used this model, thanks to Dworkin's code, to estimate these geographical differences. And it looks something like that. When you have reds, it means that you lost more signal in 1958. The message didn't get through as much as it went to places next to it that are wider. Actually, doesn't show very well, but the more yellow or white you are, the more signal you got. The darker you are, the less. And we are basically matching all of these signals to every polling station that we have electoral data for 58 and 61 at the same time. Yes.
This is geography driven, but a lot of other things can be geography driven at the same time.
Yes.
How do you deal with that?
So we have to make quite strong assumption, but I can show you that it exists, that all of it will be, they will have a monotonicity assumption, but like all of it will have one effect. And I think the spatial ID relaxes this assumption a bit by how you calculate the neighboring disparities. So if you would find a smaller effect introducing the spatial autocorrelations, you would be worried about this monotonicity. If the effect is increasing, then the only bias you will get will be upwards. So, and this is where the big project started. All of this was sort of the background, but the project was, okay, we can find geographical variation, we can find electoral results, let's see how we can quantify variance. So what we did is that we used, I don't know how many of you know about it, but we used a book called The Black Bible of the 1961 elections that both EDA and the Centrist Party produced independently. And on that book, which is like 700 pages long, they name every single event that they think or they suggest something happened in the elections. So they will basically say that mayors at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on that road was abused by X on that day. And then on the next day, blah, blah, blah. And luckily for us, they also put a location for it. So they were like, on that municipality next to that polling station, this thing happened. So we took these two books with quite some help from some arrays, a bit of our work. We scraped all of that data, we created a new data set of islands, and we basically produce a data set that has four types of incidents, so whether there were arrests, whether there was physical violence, whether there was some type of obstruction of electoral process, and whether there was some type of intimidation that can make you not go to vote. And we also code who was the perpetrator of the act, whether it was police or the gendarmerie, whether it was military, whether it was other types of state actors like mayors or political representatives of RA, or whether there were non-state actors like paramilitary organizations or some type of youth electoral organizations. We are trying to be, this is a book, by the way, for anyone that wants to find it. This is the type of information you will find from the book. So for example, you will see that today at night, these two people, they were attacked violently with stones outside of that village. Okay, we know that on that village, there's one of polling station. And you will get that for every single day, you will get all of the events that they think happened, okay? Now, obviously, there's a huge measurement error there. I can report whatever I want. I can basically say I got hit hundreds of times. So even though we collected all data from this, we are basically using only the data that have either the name of the perpetrator or the name of the victim, a location, a date, and a specific way through which the attack happened. So we're basically estimating the lower bound of violence, but we're trying to be as conservative as we can. So this would be, for example, a very funny incident, which basically someone was outside in a balcony holding a chicken during one of Arez's speeches. They threw out the chicken, and then at night they took out a ladder and just grabbed them from their house and arrested them. And I think that actually made funny political material of a chicken right after that. That was like 3 days before the election. So this would be a case that we will actually code. We will know the exact village. We will know that there is a specific perpetrator, that there's a specific victim, and it will be a valid case. This would be a case that we will not use. We have the data, but we're not using for this estimation, which is that on all of the buses in a specific area, there was a note saying you should basically tell everyone to vote for it. Or you should, there were quite a few notes like that. So we end up on the conservative side with this database. We have 536 arrests, 461 abuse cases, 650 intimidation cases, and about 1,700 victims. And this is the spatial allocation. This is where all of these things happen. So we can basically code whether there was at least one event on your polling station, what type of event it was, and we can also calculate how many events you had per voters, per registered voters, what all of this is. Now, it's important to make a short note on that book, that we cannot actually do anything for now. On that book, they were very kind to future researchers, and basically they documented all of the mechanisms that they think electoral oppression affected the results on. So they basically say that the state had a plan, and that plan had basically three pillars. We will intimidate them so that they don't go vote. If we are not successful, we will produce violence. And if we are not successful even on that, we will shift electoral catalogs from 58 to 61. So on the day of the election, I will take myself and unsubscribe him from Piraeus and put him on a polling station in Athens that I think that I will have more.
Can we just go back to your previous point that you have the data on the number of arrests?
Yeah.
Do you differentiate the incidents according to the number of arrests?
So these are all of the incidents. We use specific estimations for each one, for arrests, for abuse, for intimidation, for all of these. I think arrest is the most valid one, is why we're keeping it, but yes.
In that table, are the victims unique or it could be one victim?
These are unique victims. These are 1,688 people that we know their unique names.
Okay. So that somebody might have been abused, but also arrested and intimidated.
No, we don't have cases like that. Okay. They basically tell you that Nikos was arrested on that place, he was abused and arrested at the same time. We just coach you as two. But you will be one victim. Yes.
Any incidents of multiple arrests?
Sorry?
Any incidents of multiple arrests?
Not that we know of. It's not that huge in terms of observations. But what we have an estimation of, and we don't really use for parametric reasons, is the number of total victims claimed by ADA. Because there are a couple of cases that say Dimitris was arrested and 10 of his friends. We don't count the 10 of his friends because we don't know the names, but we can make a calculation of like arrests per registered voter for every polling station. I don't think we use it here, but we have it. Anyway, the third sort of mechanism that they suggest that happened is that the government would actually shift voters between electoral catalogs. Okay? I don't know how extensive this was. They have some documents on the book say specifically mentioning how this happened through army, through police officers, voting in multiple cases and stuff like that. There is nothing we can do about it. So there's one copy to our core metrics. There's no information. We asked them from the Ministry of Interior. They're not selling electoral catalogs. It doesn't exist. So one concern is that we don't know whether you voted twice in two different places and that affects our estimation somehow, and whether that's for systematic geography. So the other thing we do is that we're trying to get as granular electoral data as we can to match them with the locations of violence. So we digitized these three elections. They were the most easily available to digitize, and it took a lot of time. I know there are more, but these are the ones we have. And we also took geolocated data from 2004 and 2000 to basically do a placebo test of what is going on. This is how the results are. So in the first stage, as I said, we're trying to estimate the effect of signal on whether that increased their sales in 58. And on the second stage, whether that increase in municipality I produced more violence. We control for a lot of things. So we have most fixed effects. We also use municipality fixed effects for places that have more than one polling station. We have some geographical characteristics to remove some of the geographical variation that creates these effects, like elevation and, can't find the word, but like the morphological characteristics of local geographies. And we also try to control for pre-1958 communist presence in the area. Now, this is the most obscure control because we have no data about it. We can only have 1932 with external data about it. Yeah.
Perhaps you can approximate that with anti-Nazi activity during the Second World War, which was much more prominent.
We don't have the data for
this areas.
But what we want to do, and we saw it at the end, we have some maps that basically track guerrillas on the Civil War. So we want to use that, but we don't have it yet. And because there is no census from the era that we had our hands on when we started this, the only control we have for population is log of registered voters and whether they're male or female, and anything else we go through that data. But there is no average population, total population, share of wealth. I don't have any of this information. So we're estimating five equations, five dependent variables, whether an event occurred, whether we have at least one arrest, whether we have at least one abuse, the total number of events, instead of whether we had an event, and the number of victims per registered voters. Okay? To basically show whether the results hold. These are main results. So we find that the ERA set in 1958, instrumented for signal variation, increases the probability of having a violent event, increases the probability of having an abuse event, increase the total number of events, increase the total number of victims. To give you an idea of how this is sort of translates in terms of numbers, for one standard deviation more of votes in 1958, which is about 10%, so if you got 10% more in 1958, you have a 12 to 15%, you have 15% probability higher of having an event of violence in 1961. Which is quite strong. It's quite strong. When you start adding more controls, so for example, the communist presence in 1932 and geographical controls, the effect skyrockets. So you basically have the probability of getting 10% more of an average in 58 makes you 1/5 more probable of having a violent event, which is quite strong.
But not for the arrests.
Not for the arrest, but for the arrest, we have a problem that they're quite low. We have quite a few of them in place that we can track. If we had, we did some simulations, if we had more events in the same sort of distribution, it would be significant, but I don't really trust that.
So the IV is the signal,
yeah.
The instant is the signal.
Yeah. The loss of the signal, not the actual signal.
Sorry, the loss of the signal, yes. Yes. What's the first stage?
What's
what do you get in the first stage? Like, is the good instrument?
Yeah, So I was going with that. It's the effect on the 1958 elections for ETA and for all of the other parties. So we basically saw that Signal increases the percentage of ETA in different places. It doesn't change at all the percentage of ERE. So it doesn't, it's not like we're shifting voters from one party to the other, we just mobilize them. This is what the radio should do. Same holds whether you use different types of controls. And when you're mobilized and you have an electoral result, you get more violence. So, as I said, we're making a number of assumptions about this sort of thing. The first one is that Signal is uncorrelated with other municipal characteristics. That might be geographic driven. There is few things we can do about that. And the thing we do is basically, we use the first state estimate only for places that ETA got at least one vote, or at least 1%. There are fake places that got 0%, absolute 0 in 58. And nothing happens. Same for 61, same. There is some sort of placebo that when ETA wasn't present in 58, there is no other tracking of that signal effect in 61. It's not a perfect measure of solving it, but it's suggestive. It produces some sort of result. The other thing that we do, that I think in my opinion econometrically shows that geography is not the problem here, is that we take the information from two other antennas, one in Antalya, Turkey, and one in Moscow, and we create fictitious signals. So we create signals from a radio that doesn't exist, that could potentially come to Greece in terms of geographical variation, and use that to figure out the effect for both 58 and 61, and both of these signals produce nothing. So even if there is an effect, it should be sort of linear. And results remain the same in a couple of specifications. When we add the spatial autocorrelation, they are mostly the same. When we do placebo election, so we use 32 instead of 61, or 2004 instead of 61, there's no effect. And we use the fictitious signals from Turkey and Moscow. And now we're going to the long-term thing. So for the long-term one, we got data on the zip code level from the Quality of Governance survey. There are about 2,000 people for four waves. And so we have 7,600 something people in the main estimation. And we have perceptions about different types of institutions. So how much do you trust the local government, the national government, the police, corruption, the army, and a lot of other things. And this is what we find. So now we're instrumenting violence in 61 with a signal, and we're trying to figure out the effect of trust in today. There's a quite strong effect for national government and local government and the police. Nothing seems to be happening in terms of whether you think the government is corrupt or what you think about the army. The problem with the army, and this is why we have these estimates, is that very few Greeks answer this question. I don't know why. But like most of them are don't knows or I'm somewhere in the middle or it's quite business. And on sure, this...
Surely they answer the question on corruption.
Yes, they do. All of them do answer. But...
There's no effect.
I don't really have a strong opinion on why it would be different. If there was, let's say, some sort of distinction between state corruption and general corruption in the country, I would expect the state one to have different than the general one. It's not that whether you think the government is corrupt, this is how much you think corruption is prevalent in Greece.
In a way, the first three are kind of state institutions.
Yeah.
The army is kind of this kind of national thing that is more bigger than the state. And then corruption, as you say, is informal, societal, so it wouldn't necessarily be specifically targeted on, you know, how you relate with the state, if the state killed your grandparents or not.
So if I wanted to be honest, what I would expect is these four to have an effect, to sort of validate what the guy saying that happened with the army, that the army also participated in the fraud by rearranging soldiers or whatever. And that one to be insignificant, this is why I had the corruption at the end, but army doesn't really work. But the idea is the same, yes, that state actors have a lasting effect that doesn't seem something to be happening on general norms about society.
You, how have the OLS results on that? Because I don't know why you instrument violence with the signal, given that you
just for the sake of it. But yeah. I think OLS was sort of similar. I don't remember the exact point estimate, but it was similar.
And also, I mean, was
yeah, there were two. The other two were significant as well. And
surely it would be difficult to say that I have a low opinion, low trust in local government, the national governments and police. However, I don't have an attitude about their corruption. Surely it's all part of the same salad. It would be difficult to differentiate the citizens' relationship with the states simply by the local government's structures or whatever, and not relate that to a sense that they're all corrupt.
True, I agree with that. I think that where we're going with here is we have some attitudes about institutions, and we have some general norms about the country as a whole. And we wanted to have social trust and other types of things that we don't have yet. But the idea would be that for that one, we can still blame what happened in 1961.
Yeah, but the corruption clearly includes social as well as...
But it also includes me as a corrupt actor.
It includes you as a corrupt actor, which must be extreme. But this one also includes government institutional corruption as well.
Equally for the treated and the untreated, though.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure why.
So basically, that says that for corruption, people may feel there's a lot of corruption, but the difference between those that had violence in 61 and those that didn't, the difference between the two is not significant,
yeah.
Because the violence in 61 doesn't necessarily affect that, but it affects the task you have on.
Or the omitted violence are more important in the corruption one than all of the other things. Yes.
Okay, the corruption is a general measure, isn't it? It's corruption across politics, society, and everything. It's not just corruption as my...
Would be perceived similarly across the entire political spectrum, not necessarily only from the left.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure, but it would be dishonest for me to not have it. And we have some sort of heterogeneity on these results that are very preliminary, that this is mostly driven by people on the left. Like, when I look at right-wing voters today, these are only significant. And it's way too much stronger for people that are above 55. Not all of them experienced the events during the years that we have, but people that were closer to the events and have some sort of memory exhibit a much stronger event. I think the effect is 2.7 times more than the main one for older people, yes.
Can you in some way account for internal migration since 1960 and contemporary measures? So you don't have the place of birth of the respondents in the newer surveys.
We have the nomos of birth, which then makes the identification. I can use the OLS one.
It's fine.
I can use the OLS one as a control, but on identification wise, it's hard. But no, here we're testing basically the memory effect of the place, rather than the linear memory effect. So where are we now? We are basically trying to go further on the economic side and on the state side. So we are trying to see whether one of the state response, except of violence, was actually production of public goods. That basically, we are not basically just producing violence, but we're reducing the amount of public goods you're getting on that specific municipality because you voted for that up until the junta. So we are getting some road construction maps, which basically tracks how further did the roads go every single year in specific places around Greece. Any types of roads, from main roads to small paths. And we have some preliminary results that this is actually the case, that's why I'm putting it here, but it takes a lot of time. And we're basically also tracking the economic effects through licensing. So what types of licenses did the police was responsible for producing, for example, being a truck driver or being allowed to do transportation across Greece. So for the centralized ones that happened through police, we created a data set on the characteristics of the people that got the licenses. We don't have their political preferences, but we know the characteristics quite a lot. And we're trying to do that. We're trying to basically do propensity score matching between the places that predominantly vote for RE, the places that predominantly voted for RE, with these types of people that got these licenses. It's a bit dodgy, but it's indicative of what goes on. And at the same time, we have someone digitizing census data to add controls on what is going on different types of people. And as Dimitri said, we're trying to also get some information of communist presence through other ways, whether there are guerrillas, whether there are reports from CIA about communist activity. This is where we are at the moment.
Was that it?
Yeah, that's it.
It's always better when there's a pause before the really dramatic effects. Well, thank you, George. Fascinating study and the historical aspect. You finished up at the Civil War and trying to map aspects. Of course, people like Kalivas have done the geography of that, so that presumably the data for that is available to be able to match civil war activity with what you wish to measure subsequently.
So we have some data from Kalivas, including there's other works as well that sort of use army deaths and victims per different places. But the problem is that we want to go as close to the geographies as the signal we're using. And the data we have right now are either at the Lomos level or somewhere in between Lomos and Periferia, or roughly on that mountain, that many people died, which is, it's not working well with this thing. But we'll get there.
Is part of the plan also to come forward, the 1963 election, to see effects there, or 1961 is a very peculiar, a very extreme
So the
contest.
The honest answer is if we get money, yes. Because we ran out of budget for this thing, and it takes a lot of time to decide all these things on the polling station. I think quite honestly we won't do that quite somewhere soon. We'd love to, but I don't think it's possible.
And in terms of the historiography of the period, what do you think is the most surprising result of your analysis? What didn't we know?
I'm not so sure that we have surprising results. It depends on what side of the political spectrum you are in Greece. But I think that I didn't expect the results to be that high. I didn't expect that
the effects.
Yeah, that violence was that prevalent and that it was strongly targeted. I thought it was more a widespread phenomenon, but like, let's oppress everyone so that we have some sort of aggregate outcome. And I'm not 100% sure on it, but I think the most surprising one would be the licensing. I knew that police would hold power into who gets these licenses, and that it would be political, and that on local societies you would sort of know which one is voting for what.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't expect the econometrically to come up. It's not very causal on what we're doing, but I wouldn't expect it.
Okay. That's coming from me. I'm trying to remember, didn't Philip Katsinas do a study with someone else about the, in relation to the German occupation of Greece in the 1940s, and then subsequent support for the Golden Dawn and all right.
Not Philip.
There is Sarah Hobel's assistant. Anyway, but it may be that there is some kind of comparison between what's going on in terms of the left and what's going on in terms of the extreme right.
So we have some evidence that all of them are voting more populist parties when you combine all of the parties. So not just left parties like Syriza, Garcia, anything left from there, but if you combine also right-wing populist votes from 2015 and onwards, so during the crisis, there seems to be an effect between them. I didn't put it out, but I'm not very sure about it.
Okay. Good. Plenty of people to ask questions. Over to you, basically.
I missed the beginning of the presentation, so I may have missed completely the context of it. I didn't even understand what is the purpose of the first part. So, you know, there's a treatment from the radio station, which then, you know, it becomes an instrument for the 58 result, because you know, it must affect it, it does. And then that tells us how much violence we had in 61. And then there's another part which takes the, again, you know, the ivy of the violence and tells us how current attitudes are. So, you know, on kind of remnants of civil war, yes, kind of, you know, the broader thing, but I don't understand what is the point here. You know, not the point, the main message, you know, in a way, is it something about propaganda and how sort of information and mobilizes people, and
so, yeah,
which would then be the first OLS, you know, because it affects the 58 election. Is it how an election result organizes the state, well, an authoritative state against a perceived threat, which then, yes, you need to have an IV, so that's why you do it, which is what you presented as the first IB, or is it then the remnants really, and then you talk to people who look at, you know, long to their historical memories, and then, so I don't understand, where, like,
so,
you know, when I leave this room, what do I say is the main message here?
So the main question is the second one. So what's the state's response when communist parties organize in this specific instance? Therefore, we use the main type of messaging that organizes, which is the radio station, as an IV, and then track the response into violence. This is why I don't use the 1961 elections as my main outcome, but the violence per se. So the main theme is, what's the state response and what types of violence does it produce on that conflict? If I had the full spectrum of information here, it would be testing basically the three mechanisms that there are set. Like, violence is one of the mechanisms of electoral repression, then moving people and the other. But at the same time, ancillary, we can answer some things about the other two. So does propaganda work, which on the latter part can be something like a zeroth state, not the first state, that like, you can do it as an OLS, you can do it as a whatever, but it's a preliminary state. Did an exogenous message organize us? Yes, to some degree. And then whether that has some sort of long-term effect, which is the latter one. I think the latter one is a different paper. Just that on the whole project, we are interested in all of the results. But the main one is state response and seeing what goes on afterwards.
If it was the state response to support for the left in 1958, why do you need the radio signals to come into the study? Because the state is responding to the known electoral support in 1958, and the intimidation occurs in 1961.
Because what we need to show is that during this period, ERA is basically organizing more and more and more and more. But I don't really know how and where they're organizing. And I don't really know whether the state knows where.
In which period? Pre-1958?
Yes. But from 56 to 58, they went from something like 6-point-something% to 17%, I mean, something like that. But during that period, the organization might be in Athens, but I don't know exactly what polling station of Athens and how they're bringing together. And I think what we're getting from here is that through the signal, people in specific locations start organizing quite well. at least better than the other people. So I'm comparing the ones that got organized to the unorganized to remove the sort of threat of getting organized anyway.
But the state isn't responding to pre-1958 organization, it's responding to the 1958 results.
No, no, that. If I had the communist data, the civil war data, I might be able to show that. Whether it's the same places that they're targeting, but now I just don't know.
Other questions, comments?
Can I just because I felt, sorry, as you said, that, yeah, probably this is two papers, yeah? Mm. And it seems that like a lot of the effort of the kind of the data processing, data collection effort goes on the second paper, which then somehow leaves a bit incomplete the first paper, because there's all these questions about, not only about if you want, I mean, you know, okay, you can only do the type of violence based on what you have reported, so it's arrests and violence and things, but also try to see whether the, you know, I mean, one obvious thing would be the geography between urban and rural places, but it would also be kind of old and new Greece, you know, at the time, it was less than...
we have these types of things.
Yeah.
I was constrained in 35 minutes, I was like, I'm going to skip this. So rural, urban, no difference in these cases. Elevation has a huge effect. So anything that's above 1,000 meters, twice the effect. All new Greece we haven't done, but I can pull it up.
Yeah, because also the geography of the civil war in.
Yes. Mainland island has a huge difference, so the effect is much stronger on the mainland. This most of the time. I think the only thing that we want to do on the first part, so trying to get the violence is right. We started at some point, but we need a bank behind us. We started geolocating medical examiner reports of violence from police stations. So we're basically, we use the yellow pages to get where the addresses of police stations are, and then went to the next, to the closest, let's say, Protodikio, and got some archives on some violence. We have a random sample of 1,000 of these places, which costed us 2 years and a lot of money. And there is some effect, but if we had infinite amount of money in arrays, the next one would be that, because this is unequivocally violence that happened during that period. Sorry, I forgot to mention one thing. These 1,600 and whatever victims are in 20 days before the election, so less than a month before the election date. We don't know anything that goes before that.
Other points, please.
Thank you. I think you show well, Professor Featherstone, you mentioned about this correlation about left and right, and perhaps you planted some seeds to digress the discussion and enhance it. If you will allow me, I'd like to digress it a bit further. And you continuously mentioned about KKE, so-called Communist Party. So I have to take issue with that historically and politically, because apart from the first few years of the later became KKE, initially it was called the Socialist Labour Party of Greece, apart from the first few years, after that it was no longer defined as socialist or communist.
Stalin thought it was a pretty,
sorry?
Stalin thought it was a pretty good communist party.
No, well, from 1920, when Socialist Labour Party of Greece hyphen communist, that was also the second Congress of the Comintern. And in effect, after that period, all so-called communist parties became organs of the Comintern and Russian foreign policy. In 1924, that's when he formally called himself KKE. So that's what's happened basically. So my definition of what people refer to as communist parties, they're Stalinist. And before anyone accuses me of being a Trotskyist, I'm not. Okay, they're two sides of the same coin of the counter-revolution. I'm not a Maoist either. Maoism is the child of Stalinism. So basically, you have to have a look at this correlation left and right. What happened with the non-aggression pact in August 1939, for example. And that was on the cards from 1937. And it's only after Barbarossa, June 1941, that the creation of EAM ELAS created that resistance. It did not create, it did not start resistance as soon as Greece fell in April, May, for example, 1941. It's only on the instructions of the Comintern, Stalin in effect, that they started all that. So, so there is that link between this left and right. Look how they aligned themselves basically with fascism. That is a historical fact that they cannot, that so-called communists cannot deny that. So,
so I'm gonna be brutally honest, I know nothing about it.
I can call
Vasilis, my daughter, she knows the history.
I don't know that because basically that's what happened with the KKE. They became a complete and utter organ of Stalinism.
Okay. True, but on
that's what basically happened.
Okay, you've had a very disarming answer there.
I can call him, he can go on a debate.
Fine,
for
okay. So I just want
point,
to...
Point made. Other comments or questions?
While you collect the thoughts, I will make another. Can you tell us a bit about the elevation thing and why it becomes very significant, or what it makes things very significant? Because elevation is also in your instrument, must be. You know, like the signal is affected by mountains.
True, but the signal is only affected after the mountain, which is a fantastic thing of that instrument.
Also the mountain, I don't know if the mountain receives more strongly.
It receives more.
Yeah, so elevation is correlated with.
But oppositely to what you would want. In any case, which I don't know what the effect would be, but let's say it is. I think the problem with elevation is that it's some sort of control for communist presence before.
Yes.
So, like, we know for a fact that, like, not in all mountains, but in most mountains, there was some presence. It was easier for them to be there. So it's basically saying that where you're already organized, it's easier to get more organized when you get the signal. I think this is the explanation of what we find. Now, in terms of identification, I'm not quite sure how it would bias it, in the sense that you would be comparing what happened before the mountain and what happened after the mountain, in terms of signal variance. Like, being on top of the mountain and being just under it, without having another mountain before, doesn't change your signal. It only changes before after. So the late effect would be basically deleting all of the mountains. I think we also have the robustness sector, which is saying, okay, everyone who's above 1,000 meters, just go away. And the result is the same.
Any other points? You've stunned them into...
I bored them to death.
No. Into silence. Comments or remaining points before we
can I ask you about the proximity, so the species below us? So do you account, like, if the signal stops on the top of the mountain, and then you account for proximity to a mountain, and whether it fades away, then, you know, you have a less of an effect?
So you take three types of space and spillovers to do that part of the IV. The first one is, do you set a neighbor, do you set a border with other polling stations in terms of geographies, and how long is that border? And that accounts basically for the closest neighbor to what you are. So for any municipality, you're getting all of the borders, dividing the borders by that specific location, and use that characteristic to estimate that. And then we're taking two circles, of one of 15 kilometers and one of 25 kilometers, and take all polling stations around that. And then what this does is it estimates the effect without the presence of the signal on the other one, and with the presence, takes the differences and adds it to what you're doing.
It's like a radius.
This is roughly what this thing does. I'm not 100% sure what it does. We don't account for common geographical characteristics within the Arctic. If that answers your question. I'm not sure we can actually.
So then the spatial weight is on the strength of the signal.
Sorry?
It's all... In my village, we call it this spatial weight. So it is the thing that aggregates space, takes, you know, we use different
weights. No, it takes on the second stage, between the electoral results of 58 and 61. This is where the W matrix comes in.
So the W matrix goes on the 58 result. So it's W ETA 58.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Because I thought from what you told for this that it was on the signal.
No. Sorry, if I made that wrong. No, it's it comes basically on the first stage to the second stage.
Okay. You mentioned in 1956 the ousting of Nikos Zaharyadis. Have you heard? Can you elaborate? Why do you think that happened? That particular year.
Honestly, no. As I said, Vasilis is a more historical person of this, but I'm sure he has an answer. Do you have one to give us?
I think it's to do with the death of Stalin in 1954 and Khrushchev and the destalinization. I think that was internal power struggles within a number of so-called communist parties around the world, in particular in Greece.
Okay, now I understand why he had the Khrushchev speech there on that timeline and I removed it in moving. but I get your point, yes.
Okay, so next week we'll be inviting, is it Vasilis? No. Who's your co-author?
Vasilis.
Yes, we're going to invite your co-author.
You will do the discussion.
Hey, he's here now. Okay. I think we've got to the point where the discussion progresses to the pub later. So before we close, a reminder, 9th of May, our next research seminar, Yorgos Alekos-Koufis, before and after the 1974 transition to democracy, institutions, politics, and economics in post-war Greece.
But we're doing too much history.
Greece is a country of history, I assume.
Yes.
Well, I was struck by Mark Mazar at the conference in Athens making a point that when he first started going to Greece in the 1980s, he felt that every Greek was a historian. Partly because of the backdrop of what you were saying here in terms of the remnants of the Civil War. But thanks, George, very much indeed.